Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Rob. It was week two of the three-week FedEx Cup playoffs, the BMW Championship, where a field of 49, Sepp Straka is an early week WD, will be pared down to 30 for the winner-take-all tour championship next week at Eastlake. It's also the final week of automatic qualifying for the U.S. Ryder Cup team, an extra week for the Europeans, if you're curious. And oh yeah, it's also the individual championship for the Live in Indianapolis. Rex, you're still in Connecticut, getting ready to co-host Golf Today for the final time this week. What has your attention the most this week in the middle of August?
All of those things you just said. It's actually an amazing week. And I'll actually go back to the Wyndham Championship. If you look at the run we've been on as far as compelling storylines, I mean, the Wyndham, we spent a lot of time talking about guys in the top 70 and guys who fell out of the top 70 and have to start looking towards the fall just to keep their jobs going into next week, next year. And then last week, of course, we had that top 50 bubble. There was a lot of movement, five in, five out on that one, which was pretty compelling. And then this week, you have Eastlake. And I think I can make a good argument that, okay, it's not as important as last week was. We've been pretty clear pointing out that top 50 is the magic number now on the PGA Tour. If you do that, you can pretty much set your schedule next year. But there's still some pretty good perks about making it to Eastlake. And I had this conversation with Eamon Lynch, our colleague at Golf Today, the idea being that I think there's something of a pride situation when it comes to making it to Eastlake. Justin Thomas has been pretty open about this. So when he pins those goals into his phone at the beginning of the year, Eastlake is one of those goals year in and year out, because you feel like even maybe if statistically you don't like some of the things you did, maybe even you didn't get over the finish line like a Tommy Fleetwood about winning a major, whatever the case may be, getting to Eastlake means you had a good season. But I do want to say, I just want to clean something up. This is the first time, as you pointed out, I'm in Stamford, Connecticut for Golf Today, and I have probably been very misled when it comes to this town, because you and I, being from Florida, there's only one reason they send us up here, and it's because it's in the middle of the wintertime and people who actually live here don't want to be here. And so I don't know about you, but almost every time I've been here, it's been 2 degrees or snowing or both or sleeting. It has been absolutely miserable outside. And of course, it's going to be a ghost town. I showed up here Sunday night. And it's summertime. It's lovely. It's not nearly as hot. You don't feel like you're on the sun like we do back home in Florida. It's bustling. It's like a real city.
Oh, yeah.
The little road out in front of the hotel, it's got all kinds of restaurants. People are eating on the curb. They're enjoying themselves. They're up late. I was like, I didn't know this existed. I want to take all of the mean things back that I said about Stamford. It's a lovely place.
Let's be very clear. This was you, not me. I have always enjoyed my time in Stamford. LaGuardia is one of the few places from Jacksonville that I can get to on a direct flight. I have a nice little black car that picks me up outside the airport, takes me right to my hotel. There's, as you mentioned, a plethora of different options. My hotel is less than 10 minutes away from the studio. I love seeing all of my NBC Sports Golf Channel colleagues inside the building. Do I want to live there? No. I like my life in Ponte Vedra, as I've made abundantly clear on this podcast, but I certainly
knock live
enjoy my trips up to Stamford. In fact, I'll be in that very seat a week from now. I'm co-hosting Golf Today alongside Damon Hack. I think you make a great mention. It's not like I usually cover the BMW Championship, but if I didn't have these Golf Today duties as I did last week when the tour is in Memphis, and next week when the tour is in Atlanta, I would be covering the BMW Championship, because I always used to cover the BMW Championship, because that trim down to the top 30 did feel more important. And you mentioned the various perks, and it might not be as important as the top 50 now, but you still have major championship exemptions that you get by being among the top 30 in the FedEx Cup standings. You still get for certain players, it's going to be of paramount importance, an extra year of PGA Tour status tacked on as an exemption. And so you never know your PGA Tour journey, what's going to transpire. Maybe you go into a slump. But for players who, let's call it like a Jacob Bridgman, who's just inside the number, or a Sam Stevens, players who are sort of elevating themselves in 2025. Again, you never know where your career is going to land. Adding an extra year, getting a two-year exemption by being inside the top 30 is certainly a big perk. I think this week in particular, Rex, with the tour heading to BMW in Caves Valley, which has not hosted the BMW since 2021. Remember that epic duel between Patrick Cantlay and Bryson DeChambeau? There's several big-name players who I think for various reasons have to really be paying attention this week. A player like a Sam Burns, who's 24th in the standings. Chris Goddard is 26th. Victor Hovland, a winner on the PGA Tour this year at the Valspar Championship, is 28th, just inside the number. Just a couple years ago, he was the FedEx Cup champion. Now he's just hanging on for dear life to make sure that he gets back to East Lake. Those are the guys inside the number. Outside the number, now needing various scenarios to get through, like a Matt Fitzpatrick, who's really come on this summer. Xander Schauffele, I think most notably, the number three player in the world, who has advanced to East Lake every year that he has been a PGA Tour member. And Ricky Fowler, who just snuck inside the top 50. And we talked about him on the Sunday podcast. He's now 48th on the list. Of those players that I just mentioned, maybe some that I didn't, any of those players do you think are particularly intriguing?
Well, Xander, for me, we talked a lot about this last night on Golf Central with Trip Eisenhower. Just the idea that he has been dominant on that golf course. I'm talking about East Lake at the Tour Championship. And it hadn't been for starting strokes, he would have won a couple of more times there. So you get an idea how much he loves that golf course. And the idea that he is now on the outside looking in and needs to do something not good, I would say borderline great, this week at the BMW.
I think I looked it up for Xander. Minimum finish 15? Has to be a solo 21st, which short field.
That's minimum.
Just 49 put. Yeah, minimum finish, depending on how all the other players. But he has at least has to finish inside the top 21.
Yes, and you think he should be able to do that. And I think he's trending in the right direction. He's had some good starts ever since really the Scottish Open going forward. I feel like he's starting to find something a little bit more. And this all goes back to the rib injury that he had to start the season. And he never really picked up where he left off. It was interesting to me talking to him a lot at the Scottish Open and then at the Open Championship the next week, the idea that his ball striking has come around. If you look at statistically, he's back to where he was something close to last season, maybe not driving the ball, but certainly with his iron play. It's been his putting, which is frustrating for a player like Xander, who seems like he has always been among the top third of putting, even when all the way back to his college days. So that's probably the part that's held him back more. But it would be, I don't want to say a huge surprise given the fact that he did have an injury, but it would be pretty stunning if he doesn't make it to East Lake.
It certainly has. And you look at the events that he has played the best in, they've been the major championships. Surprisingly, you know, three top 12 finishes in the major championships this season, still has not really been in the throes and the thick of contention on the weekend, which I think is probably the biggest surprise in 2025. I certainly remember sitting in the doghouse at the RSM when we were doing sort of the preview podcast for the final regular season event of the what was then the 2024 PGA Tour season. We were talking about potential player of the year for 2025. You mentioned Scotty because he was obviously the name. I thought Xander Schauffele was poised to build on his two major season in 2024. He does everything through the bag well, and he'd started to he was still very uncomfortable with the swing changes he had made with Chris Como, but he had figured out how to play tournament competitive golf with him. I thought with a couple more months of seasoning with that and sort of grooving that swing, I thought he really could have done some epic things in 2025. Not yet. Could certainly still end the season with back-to-back wins. You mentioned his record at East Lake. I think it's six top sevens in his last 7 years. Like, the dude is just automatic at East Lake, even after the redo. So yeah, minimum 21st finish for Xander Schauffele if he wants to get in to East Lake. I was surprised, Rex, that as we sit here now on the eve of the second playoff event, just one player has opted out of these events, and that was Rory McIlroy, who skipped in Memphis. Sip Straka not playing this week, I mentioned, as he deals with a family matter back at home. Did that surprise you at all? Because I think one of the main motivations now with the winner-take-all season finale to East Lake, you just basically just need to be in the top 30 and you can still win the FedEx Cup. It's the distribution of money. And how they had a payout after the Wyndham Championship, the final regular season of the FedEx Cup event. There's also a payout after this week at the BMW. So let's say Scotty remains in the number one position. He could be overtaken potentially by Rory McIlroy. But if he is not, he would be due another $5 million bonus. And four other places would potentially receive a bonus of at least $1 million. So there's obviously a monetary perk to teeing it up this week in Maryland. But are you surprised that more players haven't opted for rest and recovery and instead are going all three events in very hot, steamy climates, especially with the Ryder Cup on deck?
Yeah, if you were inside the top 10 going from Wyndham into that first playoff event last week in Memphis, I don't know what your motivation would have been other than, and this is going to sound awful, trust me, that's I don't feel this way, but other than a few million dollars, if you're a player of a Rory McIlroy's caliber or anyone, I would argue within that top 5 or top 10 on the FedEx Cup points list. And I think this is probably, and we've made this clear, this is very much a transition year, going from whatever the playoffs are this year to what we've been told, what everyone has indicated, is going to be something, I don't know, vastly different is the right word, but different. I will say that if I'm a player of Rory's caliber, after everything that you have done through the major championship season to get here, and if you look at schedules now between the signature events, between the major championships, between the players' championships, between maybe one or two events that you want to add just because you like playing there, it can be an absolute grind before you get to the playoffs. And you're right. I don't know if anybody has ever been to Memphis in August, but it's not a pleasant experience. I don't know that this week outside of Baltimore is going to be a very pleasant experience. So it is a grind, and you would have to ask yourself, at least this year, let's just play by the rules we have right now. Why? Like, what's the use? If I show up at East Lake first, if I show up at 30th, it's all the same. I will say, and we sort of touched on this on Golf Today earlier in the week, that over the last couple of decades since we've had the playoffs, I have made the argument, and I think you have as well, that the FedEx Cup title means something to players. We always seem to have a conversation now towards the end of the season that, well, Scottie Scheffler is clearly the player of the year, but if X, Y, or Z player were to win the FedEx Cup title, maybe that changes the narrative. That's certainly not the case this year. I don't think anything could have happened in the playoffs, but we've had this conversation in the past. By getting rid of starting strokes and by recognizing the fact that this isn't a season-long race, and whether if they admit it or not, it is not a season-long race anymore. Someone is going to win at East Lake, and maybe they had the best season on the PGA Tour. I would say odds are they probably didn't have the best season on the PGA Tour. So what the tour has created with the FedEx Cup title is in jeopardy. I would say that's probably a bigger concern on my mind, because I've always argued that it doesn't matter if we're behind it, the media. It really doesn't even matter if the fans are behind it. If the players think it's important, then it will be important. And now you're putting it to, essentially, this is just another 72-hole stroke play event with a really small field. That's all it is. So it's got a big purse. You get a lot of perks out of it. But to your point, there's really nothing special there. That, to me, is the bigger problem than players may or may not skipping those first two playoff events.
That's why I'm really curious to see what Brian Rolapp is going to do and how he puts his fingerprints on what is supposed to be the PGA Tour's grand finale and the FedEx Cup playoffs. You know, is there a better way to determine a season-long champion than having some sort of playoff bonanza, three events, four events, however he figures out he wants to do that to make that most compelling? Eamon Lynch brought up the point, we did the roundtable on Monday, was that is sort of the points and paring down the field, is that too confusing for fans? One way to make sure that everyone participates is to have, you know, let's say the points wiped clean after the regular season, and all of a sudden you've got to play the 70-man FedEx St. Jude Championship. If you finish in the top 50 in the leaderboard, you advance the next week. This week at the BMW, you finish in the top 30. Those are the players who then move to East Lake. That would be easier. That would be more simplified. I did come to that realization as well, that I don't think the FedEx Cup playoffs could ever break into the mainstream without something that's more simplified. Like, if you're watching on Sunday, why was Chris Kirk's bogey on 15 after hitting it into the creek? Why did that have anything to do with Bud Colley's hole out from the bunker?
Math.
On 17? Math, confusion, points, long division, multiplication. Like, it's all very, very confusing. I always go through like the Sports Center test, right? Like, if you're watching Sports Center, you're typically a generalist sports fan. Are you going to be able to grasp the concept of the FedEx Cup playoffs if there's points and there's division, there's Steve Sands with a whiteboard? Or do you understand a playoff 4-for-1 spots to get inside the top 50 and a top 30? To me, I feel like the PGA Tour, with a new head CEO who comes from the NFL, which is all about simplicity, which is all about scarcity, which is all about mass appeal to the broadest audience, how do you simplify the FedEx Cup playoffs? Doing so with a very simple playoff from 70, 50, 30, throw away the points and just have a cut down, to me, could be one way that they could potentially get around that.
I appreciate your penchant more than anyone to create controversy where there is no controversy. I really do, because it creates content for a podcast, and you and I have to do a lot of talking. So it's a skill that I truly admire on your front. Again, I feel like we are creating answers to things that aren't really problems. Yes, it was math. Yes.
How do you make it better? The PGA Tour is very much,
you made a really good point.
Looking in the mirror.
Yes, you made a really good point. And like, it was so simple in my mind when you did this, I think it was 2 weeks ago, where you just, if you want to make sure the players don't skip a playoff event, just start from scratch. Just say, okay, you're top 70 at the end of the regular season. Congratulations. You've had a really good season. Now you get to play the first playoff event. If you don't finish inside the top 50 in Memphis, you won't be going to the second and third. And the same thing, once you make it to the BMW, top 30 or otherwise. That is the simplest way. You are absolutely right. But now suddenly you've brought into the equation, and I know you don't want to hear this, but let's say Rory has an off week, like he had an off week last year in Memphis, and he doesn't make the top.
Or a guy gets hurt. A guy gets hurt.
Or
a guy misses his tee time. No, there's definitely
dealing with something
nightmare scenarios.
Where you've had this great season, and suddenly everything is being sort of taken away from you in the blink of an eye. The argument to that is, and I understand where this is going to come from, same thing can happen in the NFL in the playoffs. You can go undefeated, like teams have done in the past, and then lose in the playoffs. I get it. That's why the playoff moniker, whatever we want to call it, doesn't work when it comes to golf. I'm going to tell you, the fans don't like the idea of showing up in Memphis and being like, wait a minute, where's Rory? Where is Scotty? Let's say Scotty doesn't have his best week, although I can't imagine how he wouldn't finish inside the top 50. But it can happen. If you're the corporate sponsor of the BMW Championship, you probably don't like that idea. If you're the broadcast partners, which we are, you probably don't like that idea. I understand the simplicity of what you suggested. But again, I feel like we continue to try to find an answer to a problem that I don't really think exists. One out of 70 players have skipped the playoffs, and now you have Sepp Straka, which is an outlier. That's different. But one out of 70 players isn't a problem.
I don't think I'm more focused on players who are skipping. I think I'm more focused on how can you make this easier for a mass audience to understand. Could that be potentially a better product? I think Eamon's, you know, potential scenario of a playoff to get into the next week's event could cross over, could get general sports fans to be paying attention. The ratings were through the roof for the FedEx St. Jude Championship. It spilled over about 45 minutes longer than the broadcast window. So I'm not suggesting like there's some sort of crisis here, but can you make it better? I think there probably is. One potential issue I would have with this hypothetical scenario, of course, is that if you have these set venues, right? If the first playoff event is always going to be at TPC Southwind, and at least as of right now, the Tour Championship is always at Eastlake, not every player can adapt or play well at those golf courses. And when all of a sudden you have that determining status, or you have that determining who's going to be in line for a $25 million bonus, that to me becomes problematic, because there are players who show up at TPC Southwind with the way that golf course is set up, with its emphasis on driving accuracy, as we saw Tommy Fleetwood in contention for nearly the entirety of that golf tournament, that you just might not play well there. Same with Eastlake. It clearly favors a particular brand of golf. And that's why Xander Schauffele has played well there. That's why Rory McIlroy has played well there, among others, right? And so when you have these sort of set locations for venues, and it's really important that you play well there to advance, that to me is a little bit of a problem. If you rotate some of those playoff sites, I think they'd probably be a little bit more equitable. I think that is one issue with the potential hypothetical, if you want to weigh in there.
No, I'll play ball with you on this one. And I don't necessarily think this is a problem, but I think it would make for a better product if you did rotate all of them around. The example is the BMW Championship. Steve Sands was on Golf Central earlier this week talking about the idea that the BMW Championship going to different markets not only helps the tour, not only helps those markets, but it also helps bring more fans to the game. You're telling me last year in Colorado that someone who has never been to a golf tournament showed up and was at Castle Pines was like, yeah, this is pretty cool. There's no reason other than Coca-Cola and Southern Company want the Tour Championship at Eastlake. I admire so much what Eastlake has become. When you actually break down and look at that story, it is an amazing transformation, and it was all powered by Mr. Cousins and golf. It is a really cool story. However, if you are going to do the big finish, and let's use the NFL, you're right. Let's go to Mr. Rolap, because he's going to be the one making this decision. Rotating the Super Bowl every year is brilliant, because every year you're looking forward to going to New Orleans or going to LA or wherever else And it's just going to be a different feel. It's going to be a different field. Everything about it is going to be better. I'm with you on that front. And certainly FedEx is going to call the shots when that's where their headquarters out of. They want it to be in Memphis. So I get all of those arguments, but they would be better.
How about the other storyline this week? It's the final week of qualifying for the U.S. Ryder Cup team. As of right now, Scotty Scheffler, J.J. Spahn, Xander Schauffele are the only three players who have punched their ticket. Russell Henley, Bryce DeChambeau, Harris English are 4, 5, and 6 on that list, respectively. Justin Thomas, certainly within striking distance, could jump inside the top 6. He would be a lock for a pick anyway. Kala Morikawa in the 8th position. I would argue, Rex, that the top 9 in the U.S. Ryder Cup standings should be safe to be on that team. Ben Griffin is at number 9, just added another top 10 finish to what is a pretty remarkable resume of consistency in 2025. Looks like very likely to be on his first Ryder Cup team next month at Bethpage Black. With that in mind, though, this is the final week of qualifying. Keegan Bradley will make his picks after next week's Tour Championship. Who stands out to you is like, gotta have it. Like, gotta have a good performance in what is the final week of automatic qualifying.
Well, I have two, actually. And I mentioned this yesterday on Golf Today. The idea that Patrick Cantlay is in a really unique position. He's 19th on the points list. So I don't think, I'm pretty sure, unless I don't know math at all. And 15, I don't know math at all.
Is he 15?
Well, he's 15th on the Ryder Cup points list. I'm talking about the FedEx Cup points list. But he was one of the intriguing players to watch this week. I don't think he can fall out, if I get the math right, and not make it to the Tour Championship. That's not what I'm referring to here. But he needs a good week, being 15th, as you pointed out, on the U.S. points list. There is an argument that maybe he needs to be on that team for a lot of reasons. One, he's a really good partner to Xander. Two, he has been one of the most productive players the last two matches. This goes back to Rome and to Whistling Straits before that. All of those things add up. So he would be a really compelling player to watch this week and next week, just to see, can he make an impression on Keegan? The other one is Keegan. And last night on Golf Central, Trip Eisenhower and I did 3 bold predictions for the fall. And one of my bold predictions was Keegan Bradley will be a playing captain for the U.S. team. This isn't new. You and I both have been kicking this around for a long time. If you listen carefully, you know there's not nearly as much bass in my voice now when I say that as there was a few weeks ago when I made this prediction. But I still believe it for the reasons I believed it then. And I was kind of backed up on this yesterday. I believe it was JT Poston and Ricky Fowler were both asked about it. And their reaction was the same of mine. Of course Keegan's going to be on that team. He's one of the top 12 Americans right now. They need him on that team for them to have the best possible team they can against the Europeans. I still feel that same way. I think it is specific that you pick the top 9 or safe because you love keeping that 10th spot out because it is Keegan. I know you disagree with me on that
front. Yeah, like I don't think Keegan Bradley's safe for his own team. Kevin Kisner was on 5 Clubs on Wednesday morning, and he said that he told Keegan Bradley earlier this week, hey, bud, you better start playing better. You got 2 weeks left for the PGA Tour season, and picks need to be made. You haven't had a top 30 finish since he won the Travelers Championship. Like, clock's ticking. Play better.
And I don't disagree with you. Like I said, I'm going to stick with my pick because it was a hot take I had a long time ago, and I feel like I need to hold on to it. But I still feel like he's going to be a playing captain. In my mind, this is just about how are the logistics going to work? How are you going to do both jobs? It's no longer a conversation if he's going to be a pick or not, in my mind.
Yeah, Patrick Cantlay and Ricky Fowler both voice support for Keegan Bradley as a playing captain. To me, and I think Ricky even had a line, like, I don't see how anyone can make the argument that he shouldn't be on the team. And I was like,
I could
most certainly make one. Has not played well since the Travelers in June. If Tommy Fleetwood doesn't kick it away, and of course he was 3 up with 4 to go, like, Keegan Bradley would be 14th in the U.S. standings right now if he finished 2nd instead of 1st. All of a sudden, I think the narrative is entirely different. We're not even really talking through this sort of scenario. And so I'm with you. I do think Patrick Cantlay is already on the team. There's been a lot of hate of Patrick Cantlay on social media for whatever reason, dogging on his performance. He had a top 10 last week in Memphis. Data Golf still has him as like the 14th best player. He'd be better than about half of what the European Ryder Cup team would be right now. So he's played, I think, better golf than he is given credit for. But I think most importantly is his record in the cup competition, as you mentioned, 15-6-1 in his career in U.S. team play. And for a captain in Keegan Bradley, who is not going to have many ready-made pairings, even over last year in the President's Cup, Scottie Scheffler, Russell Henley, in my opinion, would be the other besides X and Cantlay. having a sure thing, knowing he's going to step up to the plate in the big stage, he's handled it before, I think is very powerful. I'm with you about Keegan, has to play well this week. And I think sort of paired along with that is a player like a Chris Goderup, who I've mentioned a couple of times in this podcast, particularly after the Scottish Open win, had a lot of momentum overseas to the UK, came back to the States, played well, remember, at the 3M, had so much momentum, really needed to play well last week in Memphis just to have sort of an exclamation point on his candidacy. Instead, tied for 54th, did not strike his irons well, and had an off week with the putter as well. Caves Valley should be more conducive to Chris Goderup's game, but in my opinion, he's the player sort of most under the microscope along with Keegan Bradley this week. Because at 26 in the FedEx Cup standings, he has to play decently well just to make sure he's in the field next week for the Tour Championship. All of a sudden, if he doesn't qualify for the season finale, his candidacy makes it, is a much tougher sell if all of a sudden you're not even among the top 30 players of the FedEx Cup season, along with Jordan Spieth, who also didn't qualify, who I think I described yesterday as a potential wild card for Keegan Bradley for that final spot. So those would be my two players that I'm keeping in mind. We did have a roundtable discussion with Ewan Murray of The Guardian on Tuesday, very Ryder Cup centric. And Ewan obviously was tabbed for the European team. And I think we all agree, Rex, that there are 11 locks on that team. And the team could actually look almost identical to what Luke Donald trotted out in 2023 in Rome. He made the point that if anything, you could be swapping out a Hogard, Nicolai in 2023 for Rasmus in 2025. I'm curious who you think with one extra week of qualifying, so two more weeks of qualifying, it'll be after the British Masters on the DP World Tour, which player do you think sort of has the inside track for that 12th and final spot potentially for Luke Donald's squad?
I think right now the math says it's going to be Rasmus, right? Right now you're just switching out. It's the identical team that we had in Rome. And if all things remain the same, and I can't imagine how they change. I will say this. One of the other hot fall takes was Tripp Eisenhower predicted that we would have a tie at Bethpage, and that if you have a tie in that event, Europe would keep the Ryder Cup. I went one further. I think Europe's going to win outright. And here's the reason why. We know what Luke Donald is as a captain. He was brilliant in Rome. There was not one stone that he left unturned, looking for all the right answers, pulled all the right strings, said all the right things. He was an amazing captain by any stretch of the imagination. It's why they brought him back. We don't know what kind of captain Keegan's going to be. We don't know what kind of team he's going to be. On the other side, the Europeans pretty much know exactly what their team is going to be. They know what the pairings are going to be because they work so well in Rome. There aren't any questions. There aren't any outliers. So I think to answer your question, no. I don't think much is going to change at all. And that's exactly what Luke Donald would probably want at this stage in the game.
I'm a little confused about why you would take Rasmus over Nicolai. And I understand if you look at the European Ryder Cup standings, Rasmus is number 8. He'd been inside the top 6 for the majority of the year and is bumped out lately because of what has been some pretty pedestrian play. But that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, Rex, because when you look at Nicolai, he had a better FedEx Cup standing. Neither player advanced to the playoffs, but he was just outside the number. He has a much higher data golf ranking, which takes into account strokes gained data. He was 20th on the PGA Tour in strokes gained total. We look at sort of the totality of his game, and he played in 2023. He's already played a Ryder Cup at home. He didn't play particularly well. I think he went 0-2-1 that week to Nicolai Hogard. But like Rasmus has accrued almost all of his points based on his 2024 performance. Like that has no bearing whatsoever on what he on how he's playing right now and how he would potentially be playing next month at Bethpage Black. If you're a Luke Donald, I think you have to be keeping a close eye on three players in particular. One is Thomas Dietrich, whose win beating a pretty stout field, the Phoenix Open in February, seems like a long time ago, but he is among the top 50 in the FedEx Cup standings. He's playing this week at the BMW Championship. Harry Hall, who is also, like Thomas Dietrich, inside the top 50 playing this week at the BMW. He's the number one putter on the PGA Tour. He has the most top 10s of any of these would-be contenders on the PGA Tour. And again, among the top 50. And I think a player like Matt Wallace, who narrowly missed out being a pick back in 2018, former winner on the PGA Tour, didn't have the most consistent season on the PGA Tour, but he's also supported the DP World Tour. Let's say he has a good performance next week at the British Masters. He seems like a player potentially who could steal that 12th and final spot. But it does seem most likely that Luke's just going to run it back with one of the Hogards, a player either Nikolai who'd already played or Rasmus who served as sort of this like pseudo assistant captain back in Rome to get him as part of the Ryder Cup family as well. So it's going to be very intriguing to see what Luke Dial does. But again, it's probably down to just one spot. Finally this week, and what's a pretty busy week in the world of golf, is the Final Live event, the individual championship in Indianapolis. You look at the individual title still up for grabs somehow, with Jon Rahm looking to defend his title. How about this, Rex? Like, we spent so much time haggling over the FedEx Cup points race. How has Joaquin Niemann won five times this season on Live? That's the most of any player in a Live season. How is he not like already locked up the individual race over Jon Rahm, who is winless this season, but whose best finish is an average of 5.5? To me, that does not make any sense.
Well, no, I looked it up, so it does make sense to me. Joaquin Niemann has been brilliant in those five victories, as you pointed out. He hasn't been necessarily consistent in his other starts. It's not as though
he doesn't have a top 10 in any other start.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's your answer. And Jon Rahm, on the other side of it, he hasn't won, which is baffling. Like, it's just inconceivable to me, the idea that he hasn't won this season on Live Golf. But he has only top 10s. And so here you look at
players. But they're short fields. You have a guy with five wins, like a Scottie Scheffler-esque season on Live, and he's not already locked up the individual title against a guy who hasn't won? That doesn't make any sense. To me, they must have way too many points available for like a second through an eighth place finish, which, again, keep in mind, are very short fields. If you got a short field, you got a 56-man field, like, you got to be giving some love to the guy who wins the golf tournament, no?
Maybe we need Mav Neely to take a look at the live points.
Yes, how absolutely, Mav.
Yes,
Mav, during the offseason, you want to take a look?
Help us out. We'll put you on some sort of retainer. I love the idea. I don't necessarily, like, look, you're right. I guess you can make an argument that Joaquin Niemann should be running away with this. He probably shouldn't even have to play this week, and he should win. I'll give Liv Goff credit on that front, because there's been plenty of situations when we get to the FedEx Cup playoffs, I'll go back to the Vijay Singh year, where he just had to remain upright at the Tour Championship, and he was going to run away with the FedEx Cup title. So I will give them credit that at least maybe it's bad math, and I don't understand the way their points are spread out, the distribution, nearly well enough. But maybe you're right. Maybe they don't have it quite right. But in this particular case, give them credit. They have created a scenario where, yes, Jon Rahm can still win the season-long title without having won a title. That, to me, would be the amazing one.
It's 40 points for a victory, 30 points for a second-place finish. For example, 16 points for a fifth-place finish. And so, yeah, that probably seems a little bit inequitable. I want a guy who's winning golf tournaments, not necessarily a guy who's consistent but is not getting the W's. That's the top of the individual standings. I think you can make the case, Rex, that the more intrigue actually comes at the bottom of the live standings. For the first time, we're actually supposed to be seeing real, authentic, genuine relegation as it relates to live golf. Regardless of status, regardless if you're a captain, regardless if you have a contract, if you finish in the quote-unquote drop zone, which is positions 49 through, at least if you're counting the reserves, 61, those players are going to be cut from the league. Ian Poulter is currently, I think, the marquee name inside the drop zone. You also have players like Andy Ogletree, who was a part of Phil Mickelson's team, as well as Mito Pereira, who almost won a major championship, the PGA Championship, back in 2022, currently would not be on live next year, barring some sort of last-minute miracle if he won the promotions event and found his way back in live golf in 2026. Does this actually have your attention this week? The actual threat of relegation, and these guys would be playing on the Asian Tour or wherever else they can get their starts the following year.
Yes, maybe just out of a case of morbid curiosity. And here's why I say that. Is this the decision by Live Golf that, okay, we are going to create the real version of relegation and promotion that the World Golf Ranking wants? We know that they have reapplied for World Golf Ranking points. One of the sticking points, there's plenty of them, but one of the sticking points that the World Golf Ranking has with Live Golf is the format, the idea that you don't have nearly as much relegation or promotion. Based on last season, there is less relegation and promotion now than there was when the original application was denied by the World Golf Ranking. So clearly, it seems to me that nothing has changed on the world ranking side. Like, yes, you have a new chairman in Trevor Immelman, but everything else has pretty much remained the same. So you can't expect different votes out of people who didn't like the format last time around. So the only thing that makes sense in my mind that has changed is LIV Golf has presented the world golf ranking with some sort of adjustment to that promotion and relegation system. This seems to me the byproduct of that. Well, you have a player like Ian Poulter, who is a co-captain, who is one of the founding members, who has equity in the team. If he is truly in danger, then that seems to me the direction they're going. The other half of it, again, morbid curiosity, is it seems to me a lot of these contracts are coming due. That a lot of the original contracts that were signed by the Ian Poulters and Lee Westwood and Henrik Stenson's of the world, they're coming up. And either they're going to be renewed or they're not. And if you're in the bottom half, if you're in that relegation zone, maybe it's an easy decision for LIV Golf, a.k.a. the Public Investment Fund of Saudi America. What am I saying?
They wish. Yeah.
Saudi America. Thank goodness Eamon Lynch is sitting out of earshot. That would have caused such an issue between he and I. Saudi Arabia is going to make a decision that, okay, maybe we do need to create this system that you can flush out 5, 10, maybe 12 players each season and bring in 12 new ones. That might appease the world golf ranking.
Yeah, I do like the potential, assuming that this actually comes to fruition, because in years past, whether it was a Bubba Watson, whether it was a Brandon Grace, like they've still brought them back. They've used extenuating business circumstances to bring them back. They actually seem committed to doing so. At least that's what they've been mentioning on the broadcast. Or at least you mentioned morbid curiosity. There's at least one scenario, Rex, which would be an absolute nightmare if you're a fan of the Majestics, and that is Ian Poulter could potentially be relegated. He's 52nd in the standings. But Lee Westwood and Henrik Stenson are numbers 47 and 48, the first two spots just outside the drop zone. There is at least the potential that if they play poorly again this week in Indianapolis, that three of the four team members of a team that has not been competitive since the league launched in 2022, but which is, I think I had this correct, is actually the most commercially viable and sponsorable, and the Majestics would potentially be off the league. Now, would LIV miss sort of their playing abilities? I think everyone would argue that they're very much at the twilight of the career. Ian Poulter, for instance, turns 50 at the beginning of 2026, but at least is interesting about the commercial viability of this team that three of the members could actually be voted off the island. Anthony Kim, of course, is also in that drop zone. I'm not sure anyone would miss or would be sad to see the end of what has been one of the strangest returns to competition, which has largely fallen flat. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Rex and I'll be back on Sunday for a full recap of, as we just mentioned, this 37-minute podcast, a jam-packed week in the world of golf. If you have a question that you want answered on the Sunday show made for television on Monday, be sure to either find us on X, Instagram, or drop a comment in the YouTube comment section. We always love pouring through those comments. All right. In the meantime, you guys on the drill, nbcsports.com/golf, aka golfchannel.com, for all latest news, notes, and updates. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Talk to you guys Sunday night.
Golfchannel.com lives.